Mr. Welby.
May it please the Court. My name is Steve Welby. I represent Dr. Hardiman and his appeal from the criminal conviction coming from a guilty plea that he entered in October of 2011. The issue in the case is whether the district court committed reversible error by failing to conduct a sufficient inquiry into Dr. Hardiman's mental state and medications and abused its discretion in denying his motion to withdraw his guilty plea. During the change,
You've argued that the district court erred in refusing to grant the motion to withdraw Dr. Hardiman's guilty plea. But given the nature of your challenge, aren't you more properly asserting that the guilty plea was entered involuntarily because of the impact of the Prozac on Dr. Hardiman?
Yes, I think that the two fit together. But to answer your question directly, I think that is more to the point, especially as you see in the brief, some of the cases that we've relied on, the Cole case and the Para. Ebony's case. Those cases clearly indicate that at the time of taking the guilty plea, the judge had a duty to inquire further after he was put on notice that the doctor suffered from mental health problems.
What further inquiry are you suggesting?
I would suggest, Your Honor, that the district court should have inquired as to the type of medication Dr. Hardiman was taking. He should have inquired.
You mean the type or the name?
The names.
Well, he did. Dr. Hardiman informed, unless I'm wrong, Dr. Hardiman informed the district court judge that when he switched from Prozac to Lexapro, he almost immediately experienced more attentiveness and awareness and alertness. But wouldn't that statement be questionable, because those types of drugs, as to my understanding, build up in one system so that they take time for one drug to cease and have an impact and the next to have an effect. I mean, unlike, for instance, some of those AHHD drugs that he was taking.
To answer your question specifically, Your Honor, the judge did not ask during the plea colloquy the questions that I believe he should have asked to the types of medication, the dosage, the frequency, and the effects it had on his mental state.
He did ask him about his mental condition, and Hardiman said he was taking drugs. He didn't ask the names of the drugs. Is that what you're complaining about?
That's one of the issues, and I think.
But he told them the names, and the judge even asked, are those at a therapeutic level? I mean, the judge obviously.
But he didn't name the drugs, right?
He didn't name the judge.
Names, Prozac and Lexapro. So, all right. Suppose he's asked that, and Hardiman said Prozac. Then what is the judge supposed to do?
Once he was informed that the defendant was taking.
Yeah, if he asks him what's the name of the drug and the defendant says Prozac, now what is the judge supposed to do?
He should ask him how much does he take, and he should ask him
the
frequency.
What's the judge going to do with that?
He needs to find out.
His judge doesn't know, unless he takes it himself. He doesn't know what the normal dosage is. Where does this end, this system, this series of inquiries?
It ends with the district court being able to make a decision.
Well, how does he do it? Does he have to call in a psychiatrist? What good does it do? All right, what's the name of your drug? And the Hardiman says it's Prozac. So the judge says, well, how many milligrams do you take a day? And he says, I don't know. And then what does the judge do with that? Says, well, I don't know. Is that a lot or a little? Right? What's he supposed to do?
He should inquire.
Is every plea colloquy going to have a psychiatrist in attendance?
That's not what I'm asking, Your Honor.
Well, what is the judge supposed to do that he didn't do? He asked him about the medicine and asked him whether his mind was clear. Now, you want him to get the actual name of the drug and the dosage. But where does the judge go from there?
He has to inquire further.
Where does he go from there?
He has to go to the point where he can determine.
Well, how does he determine it from the fact that Hardiman says X milligrams, right? Now what does the judge do? What's the next question?
What is
the next question?
Did you take your medicine today? When's the last time you took it? What are the possible side effects?
Pardon?
What are the possible side effects? Does it make you think clearly?
What, you're supposed to read the patient insert to the judge?
Only if the issue that the judge has to get to answer your overall question.
You're not being realistic. You're asking the judge to make a medical investigation at complete colloquy once he discovers that a person is taking, you know, psychotropic medicine.
I'm asking the judge to make a determination.
How does the judge make a determination? He's not a psychiatrist.
With facts.
So what does he do with the facts?
He has to
apply. What do the facts mean to him? What does the number of milligrams mean to him? Right?
The important determination.
What does it mean to him if he asks for the dosage and he gets the dosage? What does he do with that information?
He has to determine if
the
plea is voluntary.
What does he do with the information? Does he go look in, you know, Merck's manual or something like that, or what?
If it leaves him with some uncertainty as to the
No, that's ridiculous. He's not going to go looking in a manual. He'll have to summon a psychiatrist. So what you're saying is that any time someone is taking psychotropic medicine, the judge has to have a competence here. With a psychiatrist.
No.
Because the judge can't make psychiatric determinations.
Well, that's what they did in the Parra case.
He can ask the defendant whether your mind is clear. But he can't determine whether that's a reasonable statement from being told what the name of the drug is and what the dosage is. So that's why the logic of your argument is there has to be a competence hearing.
In the Parra case, that's exactly what the court did.
But you want a competence hearing in every case in which it's revealed that the defendant is taking psychotropic medicine.
Only if the judge is left?
Not only if, because the judge will never be able to make the judgment without professional advice, because he's not a psychiatrist.
I understand your concerns.
Well, you tell me how the judge is supposed to make a psychiatric determination without an expert.
I don't expect him to make a psychiatric evaluation. I expect him to make a decision on the voluntariness of the plea.
Well, how can he make a decision on the basis of information about dosage?
I believe dosage.
What would it mean to him?
It would be one of the factors the judge would have to consider.
What would it mean to him? What would X milligrams of Prozac mean to the judge? What could he do with that information?
I would assume that if the dosage were a higher number.
How does he know what's a high dose?
Well, if he's uncertain about it, he can.
Well, how does
up.
Anybody who doesn't take a medicine know what the dosage is? What a high dosage is?
I think if.
What do you think? What is a high dosage of Prozac?
I think 250 milligrams would be a high dosage.
And is that what you tell the judge? Is that?
If I had been there at the time of the plea and I was concerned.
Well, he's not going to listen to you.
Counsel,
what you think is a high dosage, he's going to insist on having a psychiatrist.
Counsel, your main problem is that the district judge who was there said, I observed Hardiman. He was lucid and competent and responding in a rational way to questions I asked. And I just don't believe his claim that he had a sudden transformation when he changed Prozac to Lexapro. Now, how is an appellate court going to disagree with such a conclusion?
I think the judge applied the wrong standard. He cloaked this in the assumption that the plea had been validly taken. And in this case,
what he said is, I was there, I observed the defendant, he was rational, he was competent, When you say that a judge's observations can't be sufficient, you are saying, as my colleague pointed out, that it is just not possible to take a plea agreement from an apparently rational and competent person. One must send him for 40 days of observation at a U.S. detention facility and then get a psychiatrist's report and then take a plea. It's not clear to me how defendants would be helped by that.
All I'm asking is that in a case where the judge is on notice that the defendant has a mental health problem and is on medication, that the law should require the judge to do more than just ask a general question is of something of the nature, is it working for you?
No, your problem is the judge did do more. He observed your client's behavior and your client's ability to respond rationally to questions. Those were observations in court. And you're saying, as a matter of law, that's not enough. Well, that would lead to the standard commitment for 40 days of observation before the plea could be taken. And my question is, how would defendants be helped by that?
It would help the defendant in the case who was not competent to enter the guilty plea at the time because he was on improper
medicine. It would also lead all defendants who were competent and who weren't going to be sentenced to more than 40 days anyway to spend 40 days in federal confinement, because that's the norm for psychiatric evaluations. Sometimes it's 90 days.
I understand your concern. My job is to represent Dr. Hardiman, and in this case, Dr. Hardiman believes that
he was
not.
Yes, to represent Dr. Hardiman and let the devil take the hindmost?
No, I'm just asking the court to set a standard that when these circumstances are presented, that the judge question further and try and get as many facts as possible in making his determination as to competence.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Lewis.
May it please the court, Catherine Lewis on behalf of the United States of America. The judge here conducted a thorough plea colloquy, at the outset of which he determined that the defendant, Dr. Hardiman, was thinking clearly and understood the seriousness of what he was doing in court that day, pleading guilty to a 15-count information.
Ms. Lewis, the district court asked a number of questions of the defendant, it's true, to try and ascertain if he was adversely impacted by his medication. But isn't that really a particularly unhelpful approach? Because a defendant who's medicated to an extent that might impair his judgment might also lack the ability to recognize that he is so impaired.
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that, because the judge doesn't base it solely on the answers that are being given. He also bases it on his observation of the defendant standing in front of him.
Well, you're going to have to really explain that to me. Other than the answers, you mean if the defendant isn't dancing or waving his arms wildly or...
Well, here, in the order that the district court released after the motion to withdraw the guilty plea hearing, the court specifically found that the defendant was alert and aware and engaged during the change of plea. So here, the judge's determination that the plea was voluntary was not based solely on the fact that he was looking at a cold record. It was also based on what he remembered of engaging with the defendant and his alertness. So that's what I meant when I said it's also based on the court's observations of the defendant while he's going through his guilty plea.
So if an individual is heavily medicated but appears to be alert and is asked, are you alert? Are you feeling fine? That sort of thing. But the individual is so medicated that the answers may not be the answers he would give were he not so medicated. That doesn't come into play at all.
I think the answers that a person are given, there's a presumption of verity that the answers that somebody gives while they're standing before a judge for a guilty plea, that those are truthful answers. So if there's a presumption of verity to their answers and the person is standing in front of the judge and appears alert and engaged, then it is an uphill battle to later try to move to withdraw your guilty plea.
Particularly where you have a waiver?
Particularly where you have a waiver, as there is in this case, which is why the government would respectfully request that this court dismiss the appeal, because at the time that the plea was entered, a plea agreement was entered into as well, and that was also knowing and voluntary on the part of Dr. Hardiman. And as part of that plea agreement, there is an appellate waiver that prohibits Dr. Hardiman from appealing any aspect of his conviction, and this court has held that appealing a district court's denial of a motion to withdraw a guilty plea is appealing an aspect of a conviction. Where the Rule 11 colloquy is thorough, a defendant, as I said, faces an uphill battle to later try to withdraw his guilty plea. And the issue here is really one of clarity of what Dr. Hardiman was, when Dr. Hardiman was pleading guilty. And the judge asked whether he was taking medications for the mental disorders that he listed to the court. He asked if those medications were being taken at therapeutic dosages. He asked if they were effective. He asked Dr. Hardiman if he was thinking clearly, and he asked Dr. Hardiman if he was capable of making serious decisions as he stood before him that day. When the defendant later tried to withdraw his plea, blaming in large part his medication, his switch from one antidepressant to another antidepressant, the district court rejected that and specifically made a finding that the bad medicine claim, as the district court referred to it, was not credible. And that was based on the district court's observation and the defendant's responses. And the fact that bare assertions without some sort of supporting evidence are not sufficient to later try to move to withdraw your guilty plea, and they don't overcome the presumption of verity that is given to a defendant's responses during a Rule 11 colloquy. The district court basically characterized this as pleader's remorse. The defendant pled guilty on October 19th of 2010, and on November 30th of 2010 moved to withdraw his guilty plea. And as I mentioned before, there was an appellate waiver, and that was also knowing and voluntary. So if there are no further questions, the government will rest on its brief and respectfully request that this court dismiss Dr. Hardiman's appeal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Welty, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement.